show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, Titanic Tuesday, the 20th of November, 2012. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. I am Bob Kincaid. You can get The Horn in a variety of, you know, if you're sitting there behind your computer, the easiest way to do it is simply to go to headonradionetwork.com and click Listen Live. But, you know, let's say you want to be out and about and listening. Well, there are a number of apps and sites and restreamers where you can take The Horn with you. If, for instance, you have, and these are really cool, Bluetooth in your automobile, you can listen to it over your car's speakers. Isn't that neat? Or even an audio accessory port. You can do that using your smartphone and something like TuneIn Radio or Stitcher Internet Radio or the Tuner Radio app. Oh, my goodness gracious, there's Dar.fm, there's Streama.com, Roku devices bring in The Horn. On and on and on. We've become a little bit more available every day, I think. Now, this is The Horn. It's a little experiment in conversation radio that's been going on for approaching 8 years now. Just had our seventh birthday party last month. And you're, of course, invited to participate. You're what puts the conversation in conversation radio. Let's go ahead and get this taken care of. We are listener-supported. We have absolutely no support whatsoever, save for you, the listener. And so that's how this keeps going. We try to raise $150 a night. And I've got a message from our buddy John, who said, though it's not never really as much as I'd wish to give in support of the broadcast and your work, I'm sending along 50 this month. If you think it would help to stimulate other contributions as a challenge, that's my fault, not John's. I can't read. He can write. Some coming evening this month, which would be tonight, feel free to use it as such. Because of my work schedule, I'm forced to catch the shows via podcast, so I can't issue such an incentive in so-called real time. Nevertheless, I'd be glad if you want to present it as such at a time of your choice. This is that time. So, what John is suggesting is that you match up with him in whatever combinations you see deem fit to do so. We did, at the very end of the program last night, meet last night's challenge, which means that we made last night's evening fundraising goal, which is wonderful, which left us only having to do tonight. Nice, huh? So John's got 50 out there for you to match. And that'll leave us only needing to match another, or to come up with another 50 for the evening. So instead of raising 150 tonight, we need to raise only 100. 10 at 10, 5 at 20, 20 at 5, 3 at 33 and a third, 2 at 50, 60, 40, 70, 30. However you want to do it, that's fine. So thank you very much, John, for issuing the challenge. And John also adds, in closing, I want to mention that you convinced me during a recent show's filibobster, Wednesday 11-14 maybe, to contact the offices of my uber Republican U.S. Representative Mike Kaufman, who to my unbridled dismay just won re-election, in an attempt to get him to at least support, if not co-sponsor, we're hoping co-sponsor, the AIC Act, H.R. 5959. If we could pull that off, I'd have to seriously consider a retirement career as an advocacy pro. You may just surprise yourself, John. I'll try to remember to use the approach points you suggested and the tone you implied, adopting when contacting one of the GOP. Going to take considerable luck, as I've never been a particularly persuasive talker or lobbyist. Hell, I can seldom even get my wife to agree with me on anything very specific of a political nature, even though she's also registered as a Dem. She's more of a DLCer, I'm afraid. Shh. Okay. We'll leave that, take that as read. But, yeah, thank you, John. Go ahead. Make that contact. Make that outreach. This ought to be, the ACAC should be something that Republicans and Democrats can both get on board with. Because, well, one, John is not in Appalachia, and the ACAC affects only Appalachian states. But, B, it also affects not so much states as human beings. And the right wing of this country and the Republican Party have carved out for themselves their undying concern for the unborn. Well, the unborn are at risk and at hazard here in Appalachia because of mountaintop removal. And the Ag Act is the only bill that has ever been introduced that has the power to end mountaintop removal. No other bill has ever been introduced that would do what the Ag Act does. So we need all your help. And if John can contact a Republican member of Congress and you happen to have one too, go ahead. Go ahead. Tell them about the millions upon millions of health care dollars cost because of the problems associated with mountaintop removal's impact on innocent people in communities near them. Go ahead and tell them about the fact that a baby in the womb has a severely, severely diminished chance of drawing a decent, clean breath when the baby is born because of the defects that take place in the womb and even among loving parents who badly want and yearn to see and to raise their children. Tell them. It matters. If you're pro-life, shouldn't you, by extension, be pro-viable life, pro-healthy life? If you want to get involved, the easiest thing to do is to go to acheact.org, acheact.org. I haven't had David come along to remind me to do that lately, and every now and then I do need a good reminder. Acheact.org. The science papers are referenced there. You can see who's co-sponsored. The text of the bill is there. You can print it out for yourself and take it to your representative's office and say, sign on. We can do this. We can do this. And by way of a programming note, I'll be working on some of that next week. I'll be trying also to broadcast live from D.C. It may limit our contact to only the Skype number. I'm not sure if Agnes is going with me or not yet. That has yet to be determined. But we'll try to broadcast from D.C. as well, but one mistake, make hay when the sun shines, even if the sun is shining on a lame duck. Because we need signatures. We need co-sponsors. And so the shows we do next week will largely be done from the AIC headquarters in Washington, D.C. It's still up in the air. You know, we'll have a show tomorrow night. No show Thursday, obviously. That's Thanksgiving Day. We will not be out shopping, no matter what the consumer madness is for shopping. Because they weren't happy to have us shopping on Friday. Now they got to get a jump, and now we're being driven to go shopping on Thanksgiving Day. Please! There is football to be watched. There is a meal to be shared among family. There is snoozing to be done from the turkey overdose in the easy chair. Absolutely. So no show Thursday. Friday, I'd kind of like to go over and see the grandbabies. I'd said I'd like to do a show. I'd like to do that too. But I really would like to go see the grandbabies because it's been a while. So we may do that. It's not exactly over the river and through the woods. It's more like down the mountain and past the mountaintop removal sites. But it's still a bit of a schlep, and it might be kind of difficult to get there, get back, and do a show. So if we're going to go over and visit the grandbabies on Friday after Thanksgiving, there probably won't be a show. So that's the schedule as it stands. Now, it is Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday was the last named of our daily broadcast names. I think prayer meeting Wednesday came first. Friday on the front porch came second. Then came more in Monday. Horst gave us thorn in the side Thursday. And then Jim, having heard one day the miraculous story of how there are fossilized shellfish in the rock strata of West Virginia, this, of course, broadcast on right-wing radio, about the 963rd tier of right-wing radio. Jim heard it said that there are fossilized shellfish in the rock strata of West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yes, Titanic plates. And we've got something along those lines to start the program. Now, some of you might say, Bob, you should have saved that for prayer meeting Wednesday. But no, it is Titanic Tuesday, named after the Titanic plates, which has to do with the age of the Earth. And you know, of course, that the anointed savior of the Republican Party lately among many, in many corners of Repiglican land is Senator Marco Rubio. For some reason or another, GQ magazine wanted to interview Marco Rubio. Sounds like a game you play in a swimming pool. Marco Rubio! And they asked him, because these are the kind of questions it's always fun to ask a Republican, because you can get any kind of an answer, and most of them are really fun. Marco Rubio was asked, how old do you think the Earth is? I remember when those kind of questions were asked of the little children with their legs dangling off the tall director's chairs on the Art Linkletter show. Now we ask them of senators. Because they're working on, especially when they're members of the GOP, they're working on roughly the same cognitive level. Yeah. GQ, how old do you think the Earth is? Rubio, I'm not a scientist, man. Man? Really? Senators talk like that now? Charming. I'm not a scientist, man. Dude, here. I'm not a scientist, man. I can tell you what recorded history says. I can tell you what the Bible says. And I think that's a dispute among theologians. And I think it has nothing to do with the gross domestic product or economic growth of the United States. I think the age of the universe has zero to do with how our economy is going to grow. I'm not a scientist. I don't think I'm qualified to answer a question like that. At the end of the day, I think there are multiple theories out there on how the universe was created. And I think this is a country where... cue up Lee Greenwood. Proud to live in America, where at least I know I've got fleas. No, that's not it. I think this is a country where people should have the opportunity to teach them all. I think parents should be able to teach their kids what their faith says, what science says. Whether the earth was created in 7 days or seven actual eras... Yeah, I'm not sure we'll ever be able to answer that, man. It's one of the great mysteries, man. Jesus. Okay, so I added the last couple of mans. I'm not a scientist, man. Neither am I. But I do try to keep fairly... You know, I read these science-y stories... I mean, I got one right here. I'm not necessarily going to always understand everything about what's going on or all the particulars of a science story, but science journalism is generally not written much above a seventh grade level. I'm not a seventh grader, man. So, for instance, well, here's a fascinating one. I just love this. We're at a place. This is one of those Brother Albert Hopeful moments. We're finding stuff we never imagined we would ever be able to find. A newly discovered alien planet, 7 times bigger than Earth, may be able to support life, astronomers wrote in a study. The planet, dubbed HD40307G, although I'm sure there is a move afoot out in Salt Lake City to have it named Kolob, is one of only a few, or maybe that, hey, you know, the timing here, maybe that's Mitt's planet. Maybe that's Bishop Willard's planet, where he's going to get to be a god someday. Is one of only a few to be discovered in the habitable zone, or what some people refer to as the Goldilocks zone. You know, not too hot, not too cold, just right for life. A sweet spot, neither too close nor too far from its sun, where liquid water could exist. The team of international astronomers led by Miko Tuomi, University of Herefordshire, because see, it's spelled Hertfordshire. I'm guessing it's Herefordshire, using the same mnemonic that says W-A-I-S-T-C-O-A-T is Westcott, and F-O-R-E-C-A-S-T-L-E is Foxel. University of Herefordshire, England, and Guillaume Anglada Escude, University of Göttingen, Germany, Göttingen, wrote in the journal Astronomy and Astrophysics, the so-called super-Earth orbits its star, HD40307, that's its zip code, you know, that's its star zip code, a dwarf, just slightly smaller, cooler, and less bright than our sun, every 200 days. It's relatively closer to the solar system than some other planets that have been discovered. It's only 42 light years away. If you started out now and you went at the speed of light, it would only take you 42 Earth years to get there. It's just one generation. If we could go the speed of light, mind you. Astronomer Guillaume Anglada Escuda said, the star HD40307 is a perfectly quiet old dwarf star, so there's no reason why such a planet could not sustain an Earth-like climate. First obligatory Star Trek reference of the evening. Maybe we could drop the teabaggers off on it the way Captain Kirk dropped off Khan and all of his pals. CT Alpha 6, or was it CT Alpha 7? So far, 846 planets have been found outside our solar system since 1995 using high-powered equipment, most notably the Kepler telescope, launched in March 2009 to search for Earth-like planets. Most of the discoveries are of planets far larger than Earth, and that has to do with the optics and... But, you know, there it is. There it is, just out there for people interested in sciencey things, right? But if you asked Marco Rubio about it, he'd have to answer you, well, I'm not an astronomer, man. You see, Marco Rubio really has become the anointed one. There can be only one. He's become the anointed one of the right wing. He, with the vowel on the end of his name, and the ability to suddenly and mystically make all the Hispanic and Latino voters who really didn't like Bishop Willard enter the Republican fold in 2016. He's the one. One Rubio to bring them all, one Rubio to find them. One Rubio to rule them all, one Rubio to find them. One Rubio to bring them all and in the teabagginess bind them. I'm not a scientist, man. I can tell you what recorded history says. Can you? Because, I mean, recorded history has been going on for a while. What do, pray tell, Senator Rubio? We come in peace. What do the ancient chronicles of, say, Ur or Sumer have to say about, that's probably the creation myth that got ripped off and turned into Genesis. Right. And then, of course, there's the Mayan Popol Vuh. It's got a creation myth in it. That's not really history. That's, you know, recorded mythology. But see, Marco Rubio can't say the word mythology because, that 7 days creation thing, that's a myth, too. But if he says that, he will be dead. I mean, deader than last week's mackerel to the right wing. So instead, he has to vacillate. I mean, there's stuff that scientists say, you know. There's stuff that, you know, like the Bible says, you know, what is that? But I love this, that he punts. That doesn't have anything to do with Grossman, because this is where he sounds statesmanlike. I think it has nothing to do with the gross domestic product or economic growth of the United States. Has zero to do with how our economy is going to grow. I beg to differ. And I beg to differ because there is a certain amount of learning, education, comprehension that has to take place in order to work up stuff like economic forecasts and prognostications and such like. You have to have a respect for mathematics and statistics and quantifiable data to really come up with a plan that will speak to gross domestic product calculations or economic growth or how our economy is going to grow. You can't find that in the Bible. Well, I mean, you can. That's a different story. But again, it's going to be myth-based and not science-based, and anybody that wants to run their economy based on myth, you'll get the economy you kind of deserve. But Marco Rubio, he's just not a scientist. Maybe he could call Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, and find out. I don't think I'm qualified to answer a question like that. Now, there is an uncontroverted, at least by people with functioning brains and not slimy, gray, sloppy stuff sloshing about between their ears, those thin, gray settlings that pass for brains in the right wing. There's a body of uncontroverted science speaks to the approximate age of both the Earth and the universe itself. And it has passed scientific muster. Scientific muster being another word for, oh, the scientific method. But Marco Rubio can't tell you how old those shellfish fossils are in those Titanic plates here in West Bigot, Virginia. He can't tell you because his party is ruled and run in part by people who think that those shellfish fossils were deliberately deposited there by Satan, who peeled back the layers and just scattered little shellfish fossils around to confound the unbelievers. That's what they say, you know. Satan did that. This is all just stuff that, this is stuff that didn't make it through the Great Flood. You know, Noah only took two oysters and two clams and two scallops. Don't you figure it was a bitch feeding the, but he had to take extra though, because I mean, he had to feed the jellyfish, for instance. Yeah, you see what I'm getting on about? This is not a creationism versus brains debate. This is a political cowardice discussion. He knows the answer. This ain't Marco Rubio's first rodeo. And that's precisely why he can't give the answer. Because he knows that all the rodeo clowns believe that the Earth is just slightly younger than the written recipe for beer. Michael writing in. Subject line, Rubio man. Bob man. I don't get it. Rubio is not a scientist man, but he is an historian man, and a theological scholar man, and an economist man? If he's such a jack-of-all-trades man, what's his beef with science, man? Hearing this, says Michael, I doubt he'll ever be president, man. Peace, man. Signed, Michael, man. You're right. Irish Dave, speaking of pronunciation, I don't have to tell you that Rubio, translated from the Spanish to the American, is blonde. So, is Marco Antonio a blonde in name only? I had no idea. So, Marco Rubio didn't realize what a problem he was creating because, well, you know, America's greatest Christian right-wing, well, not really Christian, it depends on who you're asking. We're not sure if he's back on if he's back on the list over at Billy Graham's site. Well, it presented a problem for that defender of traditional American values, that man who says that now Barack Obama has been reelected, you know, that one, the blah president with a deep-seated hatred of white people. Yes, that's right, the Beckerhead. The Beckerhead about hurt himself today, trying to work his way through the Marco Rubio problem. The Marco Rubio cube, if you will.
But does the Bible give the Earth age? It doesn't. It says how long it took to make it, to create it, right? But does it affix an age to the Earth? I don't think so.
Show me that. I think it,
say 4.5 billion years in the Bible, I completely discredit everything in it.
Yeah. Nothing's true then.
Nothing is true. God does not exist. I'm an atheist.
Really? It's all.
Beckerhead, you know why it doesn't say 4.5 billion in the Bible?
Because they didn't have zero! They couldn't count that high. They had to take off their sandals to get to 20. And you don't know what they what had to happen to get to 21.
Millions of people tune in and take this for, you know, gospel.
Yeah. Nothing's true then.
Nothing is true. God does not exist. I'm an atheist.
Really? It's all hinging now.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's the club. All you have to do is say, I'm an atheist once, and you are forever, and God doesn't love you anymore. Oh, I'll see you at the barbecue, Glenn.
On the age of the earth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Right with you, right?
Yeah, you kidding me?
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We have no freaking idea, because all we do is thump Bibles and not read them. You know, that Bible reading, that's what them damned atheists and agnostics do. That's why they don't believe it.
Oh. Not thinking that.
I know, right?
Right?
We all
right,
are.
Stu?
Right, of right. course. I've read this before, because I think it's a... Because this is something that anyone...
Here's the thing I love. You believe the earth was created in one day? I don't know how long the days are for God, but you're making my day a lot longer, Jack. I have no idea how long the God's days are. What an egomaniac to think that God's days revolve around the sun. Not even that. Revolve around the earth.
Yeah, rotate. Yeah.
I mean...
Well, they finally got down to rotate, which was actually what they were looking for. It took a little while, but bless their tiny little brains for sticking with it.
Come on!
When we all know it's 1,000 years long.
Professional broadcast. You know what? When I'm having one of those fits, and I do have them, you know what I do? I have enough respect for you that I don't cough, sneeze, and generally snot and snort all over you. But when you're a millionaire broadcaster, those are million-dollar hacks. I'd lay off the pipe, Glennie.
That much is clear.
Of course that's clear.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you actually get the seven days, isn't it?
Right.
Or the,
yes.
Yeah, the 7,000 years.
That may be where you get it.
What do you know? Really, actually, it's not. The 7,000 years goes back to an enterprising bishop in merry oldie Engeland who, because he was a cleric and therefore was not expected to work for his bread, had time to sit around and read the Bible. And so what he did is you start with the number 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because Adam comes along on day 6, doesn't he? And then in the Old Testament, and Adam begat Cain, right? Only Eve begat Cain and Abel. God knows who they married. And no, didn't Cain go off to the land of Nod to find a wife? Yeah. So God must have had another little... create an experiment going on over there. And Adam to Cain, to Cain's kids, yada, yada, yada. And so this bishop or whoever he was just sat around counting the generations, and then he roughed out the number of years in a generation and the number of years that some of those old, real old-timers were said to have lived, you know, like Methuselah. And a little bombly boop. Added them all together and came up with 22,000 telephone poles an hour. No, came up with roughly 6,000 years. Which is just silly. That's how silly it is.
I mean, that much is clear.
Of course that's
clear.
That
much is clear.
You know, that was probably ad placement. If you listen to the rest of the program, there was probably a little drop for Vicks cough lozenges or throat soothers. Or, yeah.
Of course that's clear.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, you actually get the 7 days, isn't it?
Right.
Or the,
yes,
yeah, the 7,000 years.
That may be where you get it. What are you looking for, Stu?
I'm
are you
looking
for
the
actual age of the Earth in the Bible?
Yeah, I think it's verse that indicates that people say that that is.
I think
what
it is
or,
that
it,
okay. that a day to you know a God's day is
yeah,
a thousand,
is a thousand years.
Yeah, see, that's because that's because the Beckerhead. Well, he's probably mixing up his Book of Mormon with his Old Testament along the way there, but. How can you not when go to something like that? You know, email coming in. Ron and Raleigh noting, "Hey Bob, you know all that science is just lies from the pits of hell," as one of our teabagging friends said a while ago. That would be Representative Paul Brown. Interesting story attendant upon the re-election of Paul Brown. Remember, the Democrats couldn't even muster up a breathing body, literally, a warm, breathing individual with a pulse to run against a guy who says that science is lies from the pits of hell. That's how bad off the Democratic Party is down in Georgistan. But again, as I have tried to point out time and time and time again, it is not monolithic ignorance when we talk about right-wing ignorance in the South. A vigorous write-in campaign was run. The votes weren't counted, but they kind of were. A vigorous write-in campaign was run against Paul Brown, primarily in Athens, Georgia, home of the University of Georgia. Either the oldest or second oldest state university in the country. They periodically have fisticuffs with the University of North Carolina over that. But about 4,000 write-in votes were cast for Charles Darwin, the original liar from the pits of hell, against Paul Lies from the Pits of Hell Brown. Yep, just out there confusing the... But I'll tell you what, if you want to talk about confounding the unbelievers, I'm a lot more confounded by the Beckerhead here than I am... Right. Granny T in Tennessee with an observation. I'd have to quibble, Bob. We can run our economy on myth. Seems like our gods and masters of our universe been doing such as that since about 1980. Oh, trickle-down economics, of course. Well said, Granny T. Well said. Then Dr. John. Who had zero when the Bible was written? Let's see. The Persians, Iran, and Maya, Mexico, and points south. Let's see Beck's head explode now. Yeah. I mean, have you ever seen... I studied some classics along the way. And you look at something as majestic, say, as the Pantheon in Rome, the one that was dedicated to Marcus Agrippa, the one with the hole in the roof that they meant to put there. It was a temple dedicated to all gods, hence Pantheon, all gods. There had to be some serious math go into designing and engineering that thing. And they did it all without a zero. It was manifestly difficult and led to a few flaws here and there. So, yeah, Dr. John's absolutely right. The Persians and the Mayans. That's it. Irish Dave noting, run the economy on myth. What could possibly go wrong, man? Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right, Irish Dave. The land of Nod was invented by Al Gore, man. Oh, dear, I think we've got a man problem on the program this evening. Our buddy Philip says, regarding the age of the United States, I can't tell you how old the United States is. It's still not a known fact. If a parent wants to teach this or her child that God preordained the United States as new real estate when he expelled the frisky, unmarried, sinful youngsters from Eden, he or she should have a right to teach it to his or her children. I'm writing to my daughter in college to tell her to answer all questions with only God knows. What socialistic, fascistic, czarist, totalitarian, authoritarian-loving professor would call her wrong? It's a matter of faith! Absolutely, Philip. Absolutely. Under the subject line, say you want a revolution? Michael says, rotation? I think they got it right the first time. I don't know how long a God day is, but in human terms, whenever I listen to Glenn Beck, it's so tortuous that it doesn't feel like time has slowed by. It does feel like time has slowed by a factor of 365.25. Good God, more inebriated hate radio. Ray pointing out, like I said, Beck is doing Howard Beale. About as reliable as the Bible, I suppose. Jim, see, we went Mayan. Mayans. Regarding the Mayans, I guess we'll know on December 21st, 2012, won't we? Well, we'll either know on December 21st, 2012, or on December 21st, 2012, 5 or 7,000 years in the future. These are all just cycles. Wheels within wheels. Jeremy in Vermont noting, sounds like Beck and his best friend Pat and their third Mike Stu really are back-tripping on acid again. And this all coming from a stooge that believes wholeheartedly, as a Mormon ass, that Jesus was the brother of Satan. Jesus Christ, these people drive me nuts. I know, Jeremy. I know. And then Marty, working the esoteric side of the street. And Zifram Cochran will be born when again? By the way, Jeremy got us started on this evening's fundraising, matching a portion of John's challenge. He said, I'll get that challenge started. Here's $5 for the horn. Funds are tight at the moment. Believe me, I know, Jeremy, and it is appreciated more than you know. Thank you very much. Marty, like I said, working the esoteric side of the street. I'm sure Bishop Willard's planet, going back to the newly discovered planet, I'm sure Bishop Willard's planet will be more like LV-426. We could make a trivia question out of this, but nah, why bother? Most of you already know. LV-426 was the designation of the planet in Alien. It's what my belly feels like when my gallbladder goes south. Yes, we are aware who Zephram Cochran is, Marty. At least I am. And I would guess 99% of the Horn family is, too. That's part of the beauty of all this. We share. It's kind of like having a mythic background that we all can share in, and well, there's another Star Trek episode that deals with that. You know, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. I know, Next Generation. Some people don't get it. The stupid. It hurts. Titanically stupid. Monumentally stupid. Gigantically, gargantuanly stupid. Right-winger. Let's say you're a liberal who wants to buy a gun. Seen this one? Well, don't be planning on buying it at the Southwest Shooting Authority in Pine Top, Arizona. Because they've got a poster. And see, to be the Southwest Shooting Authority in Pine Top, Arizona, you got to have something called a federal firearms license to be able to deal in retail weapons of death and destruction, banana clips and things like that, you know, in case some perfectly sane-looking individual comes walking in, wants to buy a 90-round magazine so he can go up and shoot up a congressperson in Tucson and maybe take out a 9-year-old girl in the process. You got to have a license to sell that kind of stuff. And it's a federal license. And as a federal license, that means it comes with federal laws and regulations, communism. And it's subject to the strictures of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all the amendments. So one can only hope that the Southwest Shooting Authority in Pine Top, Arizona, will soon be unable to sell firearms. Hell, one less dealer on the block is always a blessing. They have a poster. They've run a newspaper ad. It's got an AK-47 with a banana clip in it and a red circle and splash across it. If you voted for Barack Obama, your business is not welcome. Not welcome! All in red capital letters. Not welcome at Southwest Shooting Authority. You have proven you are not responsible enough to own a firearm. And they give their website, and 674 East White Mountain Boulevard. Naturally, it's on White Mountain Boulevard. Oh, the goddess of irony blesses us early this evening. White Mountain Boulevard, Suite A, Pine Top, opposite end of building from Pine Top Post Office. Well, isn't that convenient? Phone number, area code 928-367-AK-47. Not kidding. Couldn't make that crap up on a dare. The owner is Cope, C-O-P-E, Reynolds, who is probably having a hard time living up to his first name right now, what with the blah one having been re-elected. Before he took out his newspaper ad, as read there, you know, given the address there on White Mountain Boulevard. Oh, White Mountain Boulevard. It's precious. Ah, he done writ himself a letter. You know, got out his favorite written crayon, tucked it between his toes, tacked the paper up on the wall, and went to written. Effective immediately, if you voted for Obama, your money is no good here. You know, that's an interesting phrase, because usually if somebody looks at you and says, your money's no good, that's usually a friendly thing you say to somebody, say, in a draft house or a bar or a pub or a tavern. You know, bartender, I'd like a beer. And the bartender, your money's no good here. And you get the beer for free. Or maybe your buddy says, nope, they're on me tonight. Your money's no good, buster. So our prehensile calligrapher here is effective immediately. If you voted for Obama, your money is no good here. You have proven beyond a doubt that you are not responsible enough to own a firearm. We have just put a sign up on the front door to save you the trouble of walking all the way in here, you know, all the way out to White Mountain Boulevard. Now, this guy's been a yahoo for a long time. He's a secessionist. Andrew Jackson, where are you when we need you? He's a secessionist. And it's been driving him crazy ever since the first inauguration that we had one of them in the White House. Hell, I reckon he don't like them on White Mountain Boulevard. That's why it's white, damn it! Right? One hopes that this sea monkey snorting weirdo will promptly lose his federal firearms license. Because, see, even if you're a gun store, you are still subject to the Civil Rights Code of the United States. Equal accommodation, that kind of thing. Because that's essentially what he's saying. He don't want no coloreds coming in and trying to buy no guns. Unless maybe there's Alan West or something. You know, one of them we can trust. I'd sell a gun to Clarence Thomas if we could get him away from him Coca-Cola cans and porno movies long enough. God. And yet, if you want to measure, if you want to quantify, if you want actual data for the stupidity of a Cope Reynolds, all you need to do is contemplate the fact that the only piece of gun legislation signed in the first Obama term was the law that allowed people like Cope Reynolds to carry loaded firearms into national parks. We're losing our freedoms! Why can't I carry a howitzer, a grenade launcher? I want a tank. Oh, the trivia gets deeper and deeper. Michael writing in. Whenever I hear Zephram Cochran, I think, that'll do, pig. That'll do. And yes, I realize that he appeared first in TOS, played by someone else. Yeah. Same thing happens with me watching LA Confidential. That'll do, pig. That'll do. What a thing to have, what a film to have be your signature moment in a long and storied career. You know, he goes, what's the actor's name? Goes all the way back to play in Stretch Cunningham. Archie Bunker's racist, no, really racist, made Archie mild by comparison, really racist buddy from work down at the loading docks. Archie was a longshoreman, right? How do we get into this? Ron and Raleigh, it kind of depends, Bob. Zephram Cochran was either born in Montana or on a planet circling Alpha Centauri, depending on which Star Trek Bible you hold as canon, born in 2030. P.S. Star Trek geeks rule. Yes. James Cromwell, thank you. Thank you, Michael. It is Titanic Tuesday, isn't it? Dr. John, with regard to the Mayan long count, I hate to burst the New Age bubble, says Dr. John, but it's unlikely December 21st will mark the end of the world. That's when we each reach the end of the fourth world by the Maya long count, which began 5,126 years ago when the Hero Twins beat the Lord of the Underworld in the ball game, according to the Popol Vuh. Now, we can't be talking about ball games, John, because people tune out. Fortunately, there are Maya inscriptions that refer to dates far beyond the end of the fourth world, like far, far, far beyond, as in dates so far in the future, they're many times the known age of the universe. So, Dr. John says, personally, I'm not canceling any plans for 2013. Yeah, me neither. Now, I do admit to having a profound desire to be down at Chichen Itza one winter solstice, though, because I'd like to see that shadow creep down the pyramid that kind of animates the carven feathered serpent that it was dedicated. That would just be cool. I mean, imagine that you're just doping out what's going on in the universe around you, and you've come up with all this math. In between human sacrifices and stuff, I imagine they just sat around playing some sort of Mayan version of Sudoku. Because math is fun. Math is cool. And so you work out a calendar. There's a sacred calendar and a secular calendar. And you kind of make them work, and you see if you can't make them work together kind of like a pair of gears grinding against each other. and you've got a math game that you can play forever, and you can calculate dates, like Dr. John notes, out past the age of the universe, literally. Fascinating. As long as nobody wants to go and buy a gun from Cope Reynolds. Boy. But Cope Reynolds is part of a trend, I guess. Because in the right wing, one need not be affected by, you know, science, man. One can just think stuff or imagine stuff. That's what they do. It's imagining. One can just imagine stuff, and next thing you know, it's true, because you imagine it is. You probably don't realize this, but there is a harder right-wing organization for gun owners than the National Republican Rifle Association. Gun Owners of America makes the NRRA look like a bunch of commies. It's run by this neo-maxi zoom dweeby named, well, heavily armed neo-maxi zoom dweeby named Larry Pratt. And I'm forever getting email pitches to have Larry on your program. Yeah, I don't think so. This man's got firearms. I wouldn't trust him with a bag of marshmallows. And what's fascinating is that even though he's a gun freak, he doesn't limit himself to that. I mean, everything's, I guess I should say, everything has a gun angle. Hence, well, okay, so Obama didn't take away everybody's guns in the first term. Well, it ain't over yet. And second, you know, he's all slippery-like, and he's not just going to come grab your guns. He's got plans, you see. Plans, man.
What we're looking at is a profound dislike of self-defense. This is something that's characteristic of the left. They don't believe in self-defense either personally or as a matter of national self-defense. They think that self-defense and the knowledge that a potential victim is capable of self-defense is provocative and actually will make things worse, that somehow the potential victim will make things worse by responding to protect himself.
You mean like when the potential victim gets his gun taken away from him by the perp who then uses the victim's gun to blow away the victim? Yeah, liberals tend to think that because it happens a lot. A gun owner is more likely in an incident to have his gun taken away and used on him or her than to use it to defend him or herself. It's just statistical fact. Yeah, this comes from some goofy right-wing show called Crosstalk. We don't like self-defense. You know what? We pretty liberal around here. And old Larry Pratt, I'd like to see him come through the front door with Agnes standing there in her bathrobe holding a baseball bat. The thing is, this goober equates self-defense with firearm. The two are not mutual. The one does not entirely include the other. You can defend yourself in a variety of fashions. Hell, I get scared every time I watch Agnes chop an onion. I don't know who's going to get cut. Me, her, or the onion. But just because we're fact-based and live in reality land, that's a problem for Larry Pratt, because he lives in a world where we're all safer if we've all got guns pointed at each other.
Using, indeed, lethal force. We see the same mentality in Benghazi, where they had actually withdrawn many of the assets they had to protect that diplomatic building there in Benghazi.
See, it's because Obama hates guns that we lost people in Benghazi. Except it's not. Because, you know, if they just imagine it, it's reality. It's just straight out of, I don't know, straight out of the Wiggles or something. If you imagine it, there it is. Captain Feathersword has an AK-47.
But, oh, by the way, in case you were wondering, Larry Pratt, yeah, he's all hooked up with a bunch of white supremacists. No surprise. They probably meet on White Mountain Boulevard.
But there's only one problem with imagining all this. That's all it is. It's imagination.
Because the fact of the matter is, the Obama administration asked for enough money to take care of the embassy, or the consulate, or whatever it is we're calling it these days. The name seems to change on a rotating basis. And lo and behold, the repig-licking-controlled Congress said, no, you don't need that much money to protect our facility in Benghazi. So it has nothing to do with Obama not a-liking the guns. Because there's all kinds of gun owners who are now free to go packing heat while they stand there waiting for Old Faithful to go off. Americans are now free to pack heat climbing El Capitan. The smoky part of the Great Smoky Mountains may now be partially comprised of that enticing smell of cordite from a firearm that has been discharged in said Great Smoky Mountains. But Larry Pratt, I don't know, maybe he's from that other planet.
Weeks before the attack. What they can't get through their head is they had sent an engraved invitation to people who think of nothing but murdering people who are not like them. Hey, come and get us. We now have made it so that your job is very likely to succeed.
Okay, I think that's in English. But are you getting any sense out of it? But no, there's one last little piece of beauty. Oh, he's worried. By the way, he's worried about the FEMA camps. Larry Pratt is. He was taking calls from very worried white-winged citizens. Yeah. And you know what he's worried about, right?
They have this website, FEMA Corps' first graduating class, and somebody found it on itmakessenseblog.com, and it was like 231 kids, and they've got 2,500 armored fighting vehicles ready to go on. I'm just wondering if you had spotted any of that information yet.
Okay, first of all,
Anybody want to tell me the accent of that caller? I'm guessing, but I'll wait until you do first. We're all guessing. But they're having math troubles, too. There's 231 kids in the FEMA Corps first graduating class, and they got 2,500 armored fighting vehicles. What, Edith? They're coming to get us. Well, Larry Pratt explains it all.
Now, that's very interesting that FEMA would have armored personnel carriers, is what it sounds like you're describing.
Exactly.
Is that helpful in fighting the aftermath of a hurricane?
Well, could be. Highways, things like that. You might want to be armored up and a little bit heavier on the ground. Just saying.
That's really amazing. It shows the total disconnect of the federal government from the Constitution.
Really? Total disconnect from the Constitution. Of course, Larry doesn't really explain what that disconnect is, because in White Wing World, you just have to say it and it becomes true. Tinkerbell. Beetlejuice. You know. But with all those little gems, you'd think he would be hard-pressed to top it. But he does. I guess this is when the acid kicks in.
There's a big one that doesn't get much attention as a gun measure, but it is, and that's Obamacare. Obamacare, among it.
Say what? It doesn't get as much attention as a gun measure, because it's not, but it is. Obamacare. Yeah, that's how they're going to take away our guns, by making us go to the damn doctor. You'll have to leave your guns outside the doctor's office, and then the FEMA Corps will drive up in their armored vehicle, and they'll take away your guns while you're in there getting your cholesterol checked. Obamacare! Gonna get our guns!
It's many unconstitutional aspects.
Except for the fact that it was ruled constitutional, and was ruled constitutional not by a bunch of liberals, but by about the right-wingiest court we've had in eons.
I'm sorry, Supreme Court. Has made privacy something that only applies between consenting adults, but not certainly in our relationship with the government.
Or our guns.
It says that all of our medical records are available to be pawed through by bureaucrats somewhere in Washington.
Pawed through. You notice they're pawed through? Like some sort of masher in an alley.
And looking for a reason to disenfranchise gun owners, to say, oh, you have a medical diagnosis that means you might be a danger to yourself or others, so we're going to come and knock on the door for the BATF and take away your guns.
Except for one little thing. And I realize it's a trivial thing. It's never happened. Don't happen again. Wow. Regarding self-defense, Ron in Raleigh says, I suggest this old boy has a conversation with my Krav Maga instructor. I'm probably mispronouncing it. Krav Maga. Probably, you know, hands are registered as deadly weapons types. Ron also adds under the line, under the subject line, here I go again. Hey, Bob, imagine this.
Here on the EIB network, my friends, today we discuss the implications of the Mayan long count and the future of civilization. Somebody bring me a little Dominican boy.
Yeah, except for the Dominican boy, that ain't happening, Ron. Marty gets it. the real reason the Mayan calendar runs out in a month isn't because they had to ran out of stone or just wanted to mess with the minds of the future. Yeah, exactly. The Mayan calendar is Sudoku. Darlene with a note. I guess this is how the 1%er right-wing candidates for office who lost on election night say thanks to their paid campaign workers. Sounds familiar, and it seems to be somewhat chronic with the RPigs. If you recall what happened to Our Money's people when they tried to use the campaign credit cards to get home after election night. Yeah, because they're fiscal conservatives, right? Yeah, this is precious. Headline, campaign worker receives check and condom. Check bounces. This from WTNH TV, News 8. Dateline, New Haven, Connecticut. 2 days after the election, campaign workers came to News 8 claiming they had not been paid by Linda McMahon's campaign. We spoke out on their behalf, and 1 week after the election, the campaign was writing checks. The only problem is the checks bounced. We already paid the monies to the people, and we were just looking to get our percentage, which we charged 2%, said Troy Stokes, M&M Check Cashing Company. M&M Check Cashing on Howe Street had been cashing McMahon's checks all through the campaign, but all the checks dated November 8th have bounced. We're out right now $1,600, said Stokes. They said it was because the replacement checks were issued and the previous checks were voided. Oh, Jesus. Twain Don Gomes, Gomez perhaps, was one of the people who first complained to News 8. He was handed a check, but he says the campaign told him they were mad that he came to News 8, so he got a little something extra in his envelope. Basically, he handed me a check with a condom in it and told me I was screwed. That check bounced, too. Repiglickens, what do you want? Not sure, Jenny. This isn't crosstalk on WVCY in Milwaukee. I think it is. I think I heard that. I like to listen to them to know what they're thinking. It's crazy. They've been a thorn in my side for over 20 years. I've called them, and I'm always hung up on. We also have the next Glenn Beck in Milwaukee here, too. Charlie Skies has been another thorn forever. Oh, I didn't realize we were talking Milwaukee there. But the FEMA Corps is going to get in. It's 231 graduates are going to get in their 2,500 armored up gunship vehicles and come and take your firearms away while you're at the doctor. Titanic stupidity. Hey again, Bob Mann, says Granny T. Many folks around here are unhappy with the election. With an article from daily.com. Short but informative article on local opinion. Now, you don't have to promise not to send any more emails, Granny. You can send all you want. I promise not to send any more emails tonight unless the spirit grabs hold of me and tells me to run for president. Okay. Sadly, the little linky didn't open. Oh, well. Jeremy wanting to know with regard to the Larry Pratt audio. Did Alex Jones's brother go missing? He sounds almost as crazy. Oh, no, this guy makes Alex Jones sane. Yeah. And Jeremy also saying, don't you find it funny? The progressive insurance spokesmodel Flo makes fun of gun nuts in a new commercial, that the NRA and other nutcase groups haven't said a damn thing. that scream Obamacare is going to take away your freedom and guns. Yeah, I've seen that ad. Oh, what a night. What a night. So we'll take a little break and come back. Let's light up the phones. You know there's a couple of different ways to get involved with the program. First and foremost, there's the regular You Dial It number, area code 304-658-3333. But you can also reach the program on Skype, as a number of you do. The handle for Skype, the account, or whatever you want to call it, screen name, is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. You can also reach via email, to, as many people obviously do, at bobkincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. We've got $5 under our belt for John's challenge this evening, and about an hour and 45 minutes to get the other 45 in. Sure would be helpful. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. B-Rez, Brian Reznor, doing the our longtime voiceover guy. Need to get him into the studio and do some rewrites and redubs. After 7 years, it's probably time. It's just not one of those things we spend a lot of time thinking about. If we had a continuity guy, maybe we would. But you know how that goes. Thanks very much, Sal. We are now only $35 away from meeting John's challenge for the evening. And enough shilly-shallying about. Let us go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'm tired.
Are you, Jim?
Tired of being... upon which fired.
That doesn't make much English, but their English doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense either.
No, I think we've proven that, haven't we?
Yeah, I think it's called counter-English.
It's not even double. They don't even have the common decency to do double speak anymore. I mean, it's babble speak.
Well, it's some type of right-wing Esperanto. I don't know.
There. Yes, that.
I don't know exactly what these people are thinking of. I've heard of this asshole you've been talking about, the right-wing gun nut, and who advocates everybody having an AK-47.
Mm-hmm. An AK-47 in every pot.
Uh-huh. And two APCs in your garage, right?
Right. Absolutely. Because that's what America was founded on.
I just don't know where these people get this idea. I can't think of it because, you know, seriously. You ever fired an AK-47?
Actually, yes.
That's a damn good weapon. It's one
well,
of the best
yeah,
weapons
I mean,
ever
it,
produced.
The damn sight finer than the M16 by a long shot. Cause
you could throw this thing in the mud, and it'll still fire.
Yeah.
With no problem at all. I mean, it was developed by this Russian sergeant back during World War II, or that was his beginning. I think he was a Red Army soldier who was quite proficient in the development of weapons and later became a hero of the Soviet Union or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And it's been put in every country that has the money to buy it. And, you know, as far as people owning weapons like that...
Well, I mean, I know people who own them, and they... But
I know people who own them, too. And guess what, Bugger? They shouldn't have them.
There's an argument to... Well, and for a while there was a big problem, I'd say a decade and a half ago. There were some... Because, you know, everybody and their cousin has manufactured AK-47s at one point in time. And the market was absolutely flooded with the Chinese variety.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, you know, we're talking about Chinese manufacturing where... your pet can be poisoned or your baby can be given some lead or something in the baby formula, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Well, these AK-47s had a habit of going on, of firing without the trigger being pulled. And there was no small amount of tragedy out of all of that.
Well, you know, maybe it was a great leap forward when they all had blast furnaces in their backyard, and when they produced the steel, guess what? It fell apart.
Right.
Same thing, same axiom applied, right?
Right, but these, I mean, deer season has opened here in West Virginia, Jim. You know, so-called rifle season. Bow season's been in for a month or so.
Let me ask you something. May I please?
Yeah.
Is it, like, customary for men to start growing beards, stuff like that, at the advent of this... deer season?
Yes. In certain circles, it absolutely is. Because you're out in God's wild country.
Oh.
And you might spend a week hunting up at the hunting camp, and shaving's just not one of those things that's up on the list.
Like modern U-boat sailors or something like that?
Right.
So they're on mission, right?
Right, exactly.
Just to kill everything they possibly can. They don't give a shit what it is, as long as it moves.
It's deer.
Oh, no. It's more than that.
Well, your responsible hunters around here limit themselves to deer. But, yeah, it's deer season. And the thing is, you would not want to take an AK-47 out on a deer hunt. But there's a lot of people that buy, because I'm a hunter. The hell are you going to hunt with that thing?
Each other. I wish they would all form a circular firing squad and see who could be the best marksman.
Well, take it easy. Ferg's out in the woods today, so, yeah.
Let's doing see. What?
Deer hunting.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about it, but... What are you going to do? I mean, it's the culture around here. It's what everybody around here knows.
No, Bob, it's lack of culture. It's counterculture, in my opinion.
Well,
I've seen too much of that kind of stuff, you know, back in South Carolina.
Yeah, and of course, you get down into the South, and they do barbaric things like running dogs on them. And,
exactly. And I told you the story about the last and first and only deer drive. I only went with my dad, and it was so bad that they were all liquored up.
Oh, yeah. That's called pork chop in a can.
Got it. And we got the hell out of there. But the only thing we did find, I told you this story before, was a still that the cows had broken into.
What's the brand that's made from contented cows?
It's called corn liquor.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they had broken into. And at first we thought we heard somebody who had been wounded. They'd broken into the still and, you know, gotten into the mash or whatever, and they were all on their backs with all four legs pointing toward the sky. I'll never forget that. It's the same type of thing. You know, it's that mentality. I mean, I've been brought up around guns. I've used guns myself, and I know what they can do. I have seen the horror. And at this point in my life, I just don't have any love affair with the way some of these people do.
No, I understand. But it's a coin of the realm around here. There's no getting around it.
Oh, shit, it's a coin of the realm everywhere. If you don't believe it, look at some of these Nat Geo programs of these survivalists. When you have some woman who must weigh 300 pounds, who is worrying about how much food she's going to eat, is going to tell you right on camera, well, the first thing I'm going to do if this happens is kill all my cats, because I know exactly where to shoot them, right in the neck.
Ew.
And that's the National Geographic.
Oh, look, I thought, hey, National Geographic Channel, there's bound to be something worth watching. No.
No. They have a whole series on these doomsday preppers and all these people who think they're going to survive this, that, survive the other. Well, back in my day when NORAD was, well, it still is to a limited extent, the command center of North American Air Defense Command, I'm afraid they didn't have much longer survival rate with all their assets, to these people who claim by canning goods and doing this and the other and digging holes in the ground, well, we do too.
Now, and there's a difference. There's the people who are doing all that because the Mayan calendar is going to wipe out civilization.
I don't know about the Mayan calendar. I mean, you know, there's
and various other things. On the other hand, I think it is wise, Jim, to have some stuff set by. Because we've had proof of it, at least here we have had proof of it, twice in the space of 4 months.
Oh, absolutely. At least,
you know, have some dry beans and some rice and some canned meats or whatever.
A couple of gallons of scotch.
A few gallons of water, because, you know, you want to stretch the scotch a little bit if you're in a real bind.
Well, that's true. Absolutely. I mean, you know, like a Boy Scout that I was once, be prepared. But
right.
I mean, these people go beyond all excess. And this guy that you were listening to earlier, or we were listening to, I don't know where his head screwed on.
Well, I think you've just identified the problem, Jim. It's not.
I mean, you know, if you have a situation like a natural disaster area, you're going to have looting. You're going to have all types of people going crazy. And you're going to need these armored vehicles to reestablish order. Does that not make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
Because any natural disaster or disruption in normal life will give most of these people an example to do what is in their subconscious. And that is to take out their frustrations and whatever else is in their psyche on their fellow neighbor. And you're going to have some means of taking care of law and order and civility and, well, not civility, but, you know, civil defense, basically, is what it is. And I can understand, you know, FEMA being prepared for things of that nature. I just wish FEMA were even more prepared and were given more respect. But they don't have the assets right now to take care of the things up in New York and New Jersey.
Right. And why is that, Jim?
It's because they've been absolutely degraded in their assets.
Unfunded. Underfunded.
Got it.
And who is it that's out there that thinks that government can't do anything right? The Republican Party. You know, if they can't fulminate about babies or trying to blow somebody up or get a real good hot war going with somebody, they're not interested. But when it comes down, I mean, it makes no sense to me. Yet I can't figure out the American people, Jim. Because what it boils down to is we have put, you know, the purse strings of the government are in the hands of the House of Representatives. And we have put the purse strings of government in the hands of people who don't believe in government.
Well, I mean, for example, look at one of the guys who's on the National Science Committee or whatever. What is that idiot?
Yeah, saying? That's Paul Brown. That's the science is lies from the pits of hell.
I don't know. When I see that, I just wonder exactly. Why is a person of this mentality allowed to be in the House of Representatives? Unless he was representative enough, by enough nuts who subscribed to his philosophy.
And that country's full of them. I mean, Corey down in Louisville just sent me a story. You know, the right-wingers, a special particular brand of right-winger, thinks that the sun rises and sets out Ron Paul's ass. The great writer Charles Pierce refers to him as crazy old Uncle Liberty.
Oh, yeah.
And Ron Paul... for instance, the photograph I'm looking at has a picture of Ron Paul sitting behind his desk, and there's a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." So this is a guy who hates government spending, right, Jim? I mean, the New York Times profile that we focused on months ago that talked about that seminal study, that story that shaped him as a young boy during the Second World War when a butcher would defy the rationing rules and sell black market meat on Saturdays in Pittsburgh, and that was him taking the libertarian way of solving obnoxious government interference, you know, because our soldiers needed to eat.
Listen, my grandmother used to tell me stories about the guy who would come on Saturday night after dark selling his wares, you know, during rationing in World War II.
Yeah. Well, it turns out Ron Paul... Ron Paul got $8 million from federal taxpayers for recreational fishing phase piers, $2.5 million for new benches, trash receptacles, bike racks, decorative street lighting, $2.5 million to modify medians and sidewalks for an economically disadvantaged area in his district, $2.5 million from federal taxpayers for a Revelation Missionary Baptist Community Outreach Center, $38 million in multiple requests for literacy programs to encourage parents to read aloud to their children, $18 million federal commuter rail preliminary engineering phase. You know, and the thing is, there's nothing on this list except for the missionary Baptist thing, there's nothing really on this list with which I particularly disagree. But I do disagree, Jim, with a guy getting it who swears up and down that sort of thing is evil.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? You know, how these people will denounce the very mouth that feeds their interest.
Right. It's that scene from Casablanca where the Captain Renault is, I'm shocked to find out there's gambling going on in your establishment. Your winnings, Captain?
You mean Claude Rains?
Yes.
Yeah.
Louis Renault.
What an incredible actor he was.
Indeed.
But nonetheless, it's just amazing. I mean, you've had yourself a field day with these people, and
I ain't even started.
Oh, my God.
It goes on and on and on. I kid you not, Jim.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it at all. I mean,
I got more right-wing lunacy in front of me this evening than Carter has little liver pills.
Well, at least, Bob, they do provide grist for your mill.
Well, and yes, and that does come in handy.
And they do. I mean, they give you some sort of raison d'etre, right?
You know, it keeps me off the streets, Jim.
Well, yeah, it does. Absolutely. Unfortunately, you're going to have all these crazy people still fulminating about the election.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here chomping at the bit. I got stories that I want to talk about right now that I got to save till tomorrow. I got to save till tomorrow. I just got to.
Well, I'm sure they'll keep, and I'm sure you'll have many, many more. By the way, what's for Thanksgiving dinner?
Oh, we're traditionalists here. I'll roast a turkey. Uh-huh. There'll be mashed potatoes and homemade gravy. Every year I make the dressing, and the whole family says, why don't we do this more often? Because the dressing, screw the turkey, the dressing is the centerpiece.
Of course.
Because it's just, and when you think about it, if you think about the English usage of the word pudding, the dressing that we use with turkey on Thanksgiving is a savory pudding. Because a pudding is like, when it's a dessert pudding, it's like cake that's been soaked in, you know, fruit liquids and liqueurs and things like that. Well, you do the same thing with the dressing, only it's cornbread and biscuits and white bread and then pan drippings to moisten it up. And it's very simple. It's just onions and sage and celery and salt and pepper. But my God, it is. It's a delight.
It does appeal to the gustatory sense, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It does. And I haven't figured out yet what I'm going to do in the way of a dessert. I may make Lottie's incomparable sweet potato pie. He put that recipe out there a while back. It's a sweet potato pie that you make with it's a brandied sweet potato pie. Holy cow!
Well, you need to think about a Christmas pudding too. Now, those can really set you free.
Oh, yes, they can.
But you better have...
And they've got something approaching the specific gravity of U-238, don't they, Jim?
Well, yeah, I call it JP-4. I mean, good Lord, you better have a fire extinguisher near that thing in case something goes wrong.
I've never tried my hand at one of those.
We'll have to talk about that another time, because I know you have other things that you want to talk about and other people you want to talk to. But nonetheless, they can be quite wonderful. They really can be.
Oh, I can imagine. Now you've fired up my imagination.
Well, I mean, you know, there are a number of liqueurs and things like that that go into these things, and you light them up, and they're absolutely delightful. They really are. Which brings me to one thing. There are so many good things in this world, whether it's food or whether it's self-actualization or just thinking sanely, that are so much more appealing than people out there trying to do evil under the pretense of doing good.
Very true.
We only have a short time on this blue little planet. As President Kennedy said, we all are mortal. And it's such a pity to me that we cannot utilize said time for better things and purposes.
Indeed.
It really is. Maybe I sound stupid to a lot of people when I say that, but...
No, I don't think so.
That's just the way I feel. It really is. Well, look, I'm going to let you go. You got people that want to talk to you, and I just thought I would just throw in a few things about what we discussed. I'm not going to even mention the situation in the Middle East. I hope it works out.
God, I've got a clip here from Chris Hedges I may get to later in the evening of him just talking about what that really means. And you want to talk about sobering.
Well, there are a lot of bad things going on over there on both sides. And to tell you the truth, the jury with me is out of that. I don't know who's firing rockets on whom and why and who started what, who shot John. And I don't think that our government and Secretary Clinton knows exactly what she's going to try to do about it either. But I just hope they
can. You know, it could be ended pretty quick, though. We go over there and just say, listen, you want to keep getting those billions of dollars? Yeah, stop it.
Well, I wish it were that simple. I really do. But there will always be somebody who will be willing to give them those billions of dollars. Let me tell you, there's always money, you know, for both sides. And there are always people in other areas of the world who have interest in keeping that conflagration alight. And that's
good.
The bad part.
It's good for business.
You got it right there. Listen, you take care. Have a good night, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And I hope that you don't watch too much football or whatever. And maybe you'll get back on Friday night.
Well, maybe. If we don't go visit the grandbabies, or if we get back from the grandbabies in time, yeah. It's kind of in a state of flux right now.
Well, if you do, just have an open forum.
Isn't that what we do every night?
Well, I mean, you know, just let people start talking from hour one. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who are.
We'd be about the only live radio there is.
Yeah.
At least on the progressive side.
Well, you ought to do it, and you know, you might do it. I can't tell you what you should do, but. I mean, you don't need to have a prepared program or whatever. I'm certain there'll be enough stuff on air that everybody will be glad to talk about and see what the hell's going on at the end of their turkey day.
Indeed.
It'd be a hell of a lot better than spending time at, what do you call them, box stores?
Big box, yeah.
What is that?
Well, it I think it's a representation of the fact that these stores are basically themselves giant metal boxes. Crammed full of crap. You know, your Walmarts, your Targets, your Sam's, your that kind of thing.
I never go to any of those places, so I didn't know what you were talking about.
They're generally referred to as big box stores, and of course, there is a strike going on with Walmart, and I hope people of conscience will refrain from going to Wally World on Friday because they treat their workers like crap. You have to work 6 years. I mean, it's an astonishing, shameful number. But you have to work for 6 years, I think, at Walmart to go from, oh, what is it? I'm trying to see here. To go from something around, oh, here it is. People striking are asking for a minimum wage of $13 an hour at Walmart. $13 an hour.
Oh, by the way, your illustrious friend over here was saying that was their entry-level salary.
$13 an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, I know he's a liar.
Well, I know he is, too. I mean, God knows. I mean, the guy's an idiot, but I thought to myself. And this is going out on the radio, and people are believing it. And you would not believe the responses given. But you were saying about Walmart. I'm sorry.
No, you start around $8.50 an hour, and it takes about 6 years to get to $10.47 an hour.
Wow, talk about
it. On the other hand, the CEO of Walmart makes a little over $8,300 per hour. And, you know, not to start whistling the international or anything, Jim. But is there anything that any human being does on planet Earth that is worth $8,300 an hour?
I don't know, other than what General Patton once said, shoveling shit in Louisiana, and you better not tell your grandchildren that you did that. That's the only thing I can say. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. But, you know, hopefully people will stay away from the big box stores, and especially Walmart on Friday.
They'll be there. They'll be...
Well, but the American sheeple will flock there, and we will get the traditional, the now traditional American story, Jim, of someone trampled to death, someone shot over over a pair of sneakers, somebody gunned down over My Little Pony in the toy aisle.
You know, Bob, I will say this, and I got to get off here, but I think Walmart is the worst thing that ever happened to this country.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, they destroyed the downtown area of most cities. They come in, and we talked about this before. They never buy. They always lease.
Right.
And when they leave a building that...
The big box.
That's it. You got it. And they are so predatory. But there are so many of these people who believe in all of our right-wing virtues and this, that, and the other, who worship at the shrine of Walmart.
Precisely.
Good night, buddy.
Take care, Jim.
Out here.
Bye now. Our good buddy, Jim. He's not kidding. Walmart's evil. You know that. Stay away. Not that I have to tell you, but, you know, maybe talk to your neighbors and stuff and explain. Can you imagine taking 6 years to go from 850 to 1050? Jesus. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy, what's up, man?
Well, since we're just talking about Walmart, I've told everyone my horror stories from Walmart, so I'm 100% behind this boycott, and I hope it really affects them Black Friday.
I do, too. Yeah. $13 an hour is not exactly a princely ransom.
Hey, you might not get to 9 if you work good for 60 days or something like that, I think I remember it being. They give you either a 25-cent or 50-cent raise, and then you see nothing for years.
No.
And you pay in, and you get hit over the head with, if you form a union, we're going to leave town. Fuck the serfs. That's what they're all about. Exactly what they're about. And I know in Vermont we're having a brand new one built up near the Canadian border. It'll be good for my area. The Canadians will stay up there. Like the Canadians, I mean the Quebecers, they have a tendency to be a little bit disliked down in this area because they trash us. They literally will buy things at Walmart, go to a local hotel, if they get that far, and they will stop in a parking lot somewhere, pull up all the tags, and throw all their old clothes to the ground, including the boxes and the tags, and drive across the border to avoid taxes.
Right.
So it won't happen so much down here anymore. It'll happen close to the Canadian border. So I guess I'll be thankful for that, even though I hate Walmart because I don't want to deal with the trash down here. But, I have so much contempt for Walmart, I can't even take it. I really, really just know the destruction they've done wherever they go. And just the way they treat their employees, from a cashier up to a truck driver who supplies the company what they sell.
Rick Smith told me a story one time about what it's like to, not that he was one, but he knew people who were, what it was like to be a truck driver for Walmart. And it's miserable.
Yeah, it is. I may have mentioned it once, but I'll refresh people's mind. Back when Sam was alive, not that he was a saint, because he was slightly better than his own kids there, he would allow the truck drivers to sleep in the parking lots, because it was a safe haven for them. It was their company. They weren't on the side of a road somewhere. They weren't in a rest area. They could get jacked and shot in the middle of the night, supposedly. As soon as he died, his kids said, oh, fuck no, truck drivers get out of here. They're dirty. They make our company look bad. We can't have them been seen by the public unless it's at the back door. And they still don't do that to this day.
Dear God.
So delivering, you get the fuck out of that parking lot because you're a bad image for this company.
It's unconscionable. Like you said, from the truck drivers to the people who work on the floors. Can you imagine the poor souls that are going to have to work Black Friday? I mean, madness. Nothing but madness.
And I hate to say it because I feel in my heart's a hurt this could easily happen with Walmart. These people that will protest and will strike, they can consider their jobs done. I see Walmart already in the hiring process trying to recover from this if it happens, in preparation for this to happen.
Well, what I think ultimately this is, Jeremy, this is a setup, and I don't mean that in a negative sense. This is taking place so that they can set up the retaliatory discharge claim before the National Labor Relations Board.
Right, and I think it's something like that, too, where they can basically say, we don't have to do this. And I just fear for these people's jobs who are legitimate, have a legitimate gripe with these people for the way they've been treated for X years, whether they've been there 20 years or 5 years or 6 months.
Yeah.
Nobody is happy working for them. They're unhappy growth.
Well, I have more reason to know about what goes on there than probably bears discussing here.
Yeah, me too. But I was also calling because I heard Jim and yourself talking about the M16 compared to the AK-47.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you've ever seen the episode, and it features Army, unfortunately. I do like his character portrayed for Mail Call, because from personal experience, boot camp is pretty damn near that. Other than shooting your drill instructor, they're pretty much that way at boot camp.
Yeah.
He did an episode where they compared the Alushnikov to an M16, and the guy with the Aristokov broke it down, put it back together, and beat the M16 all around, except for the last part where Armley hid the firing pin because he was going to beat the M16 being put back together. That's how good they're made.
Or that's how comprehensible the design is.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, I thought I'd just going back to Walmart for a minute. Ron in Raleigh just wrote in. He said, today on Ed Schultz, a Walmart truck driver called in and said that Walmart charges them $50 to unload their trucks.
No, I wonder if these are contractors or if these are guys that work for the company. I can't believe they're charging their own drivers to unload their trucks at the store.
Yeah, if the truck driver doesn't unload it himself. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised in the least. And it bears remembering that one Walmart air, I think this is the way the statistic works out, one Walmart air has more wealth than the bottom 40% of the entire United States.
And all of them combined have more than 100 million people in America.
Yeah.
Not even 100 million people. I think it's 100 million households. So even if there's two per house, you do the math.
Yeah,
that's an awful lot of people that have dollars less than they can even dream of having. Not to mention that one heiress this summer who was caught drunk driving and basically bought her way out of it. Completely and 100% handed cash over to the judge and got off with it. Nothing to her about it.
Nice work if you can get it, right?
There's something to be said for in America that you can buy your way out of crime. There really is, unfortunately.
Oof.
But I'll let you go. I just want to chime in on those two things, especially the Walmart thing, because I can't stand them and they make my stomach turn.
Yeah, indeed. All right, well, Jeremy, have yourself, if I don't talk to you before then, have a good Thanksgiving.
You too. Have a good American Indian Holocaust Day.
Well, yeah, thank you. Yes.
Okay, talk to you later, Bob.
All right, bye now. Yeah, it is worth remembering that the first Thanksgiving was celebrated, I believe, at the behest of Governor Bradford of Massachusetts, who offered up thanks to the Almighty for allowing the white folks to slaughter many Indians. Yeah. The modern incarnation of Thanksgiving, of course, was instituted during the Civil War by Abraham Lincoln. And then became an official national holiday, what, under FDR? Have I got it right? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. My name's Kevin. I'm a first-time caller. I've been listening to you for quite a few months now, however.
Awesome. Wonderful to hear from you.
Thank you. I wanted to participate in this and say that just a little short thing about me. I grew up in upstate New York near Woodstock in Kingston, New York. and then when I was 19, I traveled to Canada with a girl I met in Vermont, and then we moved out west to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. I lived there for 2 years as an illegal immigrant, and I have to say that the Canadian people were some of the nicest people I've ever met in my entire life. I think that the ethic of cooperation extended right down to the way people socialized with each other, because I saw a spirit of cooperation rather than a spirit of competition, and it was wonderful. However, of course, eventually... immigration people caught up with me and told me I had to leave the country. So I left in haste and then ended up in Grand Forks, North Dakota, where I lived for 7 years, and I worked at the public radio station there. And
You've got the voice for it.
Well, thank you. Yes, that was just luck, because I was very interested in radio from the time I was five. My dad bought an RCA tube tape recorder, and I used to pretend I was a DJ when I was 5 years old. But
that's generally how it starts.
That's right. So, but anyway, eventually meandering around, I eventually ended up in the Twin Cities, and that's where I currently live, in Roseville, Minnesota. I want to say that I'm really upset with what's happening to Canada, because with the conservative government there and with the tar sands pipeline and with the police doing the same type of things that they're doing here now, as I see what happened in, I believe it was in Toronto, they're using the same tactics as police here use, is intimidation and fear. And people trying to exercise their rights are intimidated. And I never thought I would see that happen up there. But Stephen Harper's government is awful. And so the same thing. Now, excuse me for jumping all over the place.
Oh, that's okay. Take your time.
Okay.
By the way, you're getting a big Canadian howdy from Kath from Canada in the chat room.
Oh, very good. Very good. Thank her for that, because I do have to say, man, the Canadian, they were so nice, and it was the formative years of my life, and it had a huge impact on me.
She too despises Harper, so, and many others do. And before we jump to the next topic, just a quick observation. You know, the right wing is forever fulminating their nightmare scenario that, you know, them liberals, communist, pinko, yada yada yada, gonna lead us to one world government. But the fact of the matter is, they're the ones who are doing it. The so-called neoliberals, the neocons, or the right wingers, the globalizers, because what you just described, that the American over response to civil disobedience and people trying to petition the government for redress of grievances is contagious. It went right over the border to Canada, and it's gone, you know, look at what happens in Greece. Look anywhere in the world to the way that the authority structure responds to people trying to protect what little bit they have left. And you see that it is an American model that is going global. And if you want one world government, by God, there it is. And that's not something that Kenyan Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people started.
No, that's right. And really, it's another example of their projection, because they project on others everything that they do themselves.
Yes.
They continually do that to try to subvert our ability to counter what they're doing by saying, oh, see, that's what they do. And so it is a psychological matter of projection on their part, and that's what they always do, and they'll continue to do it. And I hope that most people can see through that, you know. The thing I wanted to talk about specifically, however, is this idea of Black Friday starting on Thanksgiving evening. That's atrocious, and it's you know, those people get very few days off, and the one day to spend with their family, which should be a family value. to spend the entire day of Thanksgiving with their family before they have to return to work the next day, which is then going to be hellish from that point up until everybody returns gifts past January. To take that away from them is unconscionable. You know, and I was explaining to my 11-and-a-half-year-old daughter last night why we are not going to participate in Black Friday and why we are not going to participate in the materialism that has so shrouded Christmas to render it
meaningless.
Worse than meaningless.
Yeah.
I mean,
to render it obscene.
Yes, that's correct. And she got it. You know, I mean, I was telling her about how people are trampled in front of Walmarts and, and to get deals, and the greed and avarice with which people operate now is something to be shunned. And I know I'm kind of like spitting in the wind, but I do want to teach her to have proper values and proper relationships.
But see, Kevin, I don't think that is spitting into the wind. I think that's concrete. And it's generation changing, because she's going to grow up and she's going to tell other people and she's going to find people of like mind. There's really no advertising campaign that would address this. Grassroots have to happen at grassroots, or else it's astroturf. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And you sound like you and I are cut out of a similar mold, because I remember a very long time ago now, or so it seems, when one of my precious daughters wanted a Miley Cyrus T-shirt.
Okay.
And that led to me telling her, and Agnes got really upset with me. Do you have to ruin everything, honey? Do you have to take their childhood away from them right now? Really? Because I said, well, honey, let's look at the tag. Oh, look, made in Sri Lanka. You know what that means? Do you know where Sri Lanka is, honey? Yeah, there's a kid your age chained to a table in Sri Lanka for 12 hours a day making these shirts. She's paid less per hour than I spend on a bottle of pop for you. And of course, the tears welled up and began to run down her face, and that's when Agnes didn't like it so much.
Right.
But that is reality. You know, what you said earlier about, you know, shopping on Thanksgiving Day. It is an obscenity, and it is so shocking to me that these people who evince such a loud and boisterous support for family values will be there. Oh no, screw the turkey. Turkey's at, well, you know, I got some Swanson turkey dinners, but we need to get to the store. Right?
Yes, that's right.
And so, you know, their family values are as phony as their concern about the unborn, their concern about, they're just phony. The only thing they are, there are some well-intended cannon fodder for the culture war. But beyond that, what they really worship has nothing to do with home, has nothing to do with family, has nothing to do with Jesus or religion or faith. They worship the same capitalist market that their betters do, but they do it with a lot less money, not understanding that the same people are setting up the whole lot less money part. Make any sense?
Yes, it's making total sense. And so as these values erode, I want to, you know, have a bulwark against that for my family and my child. And like you said, I'm sure she will meet other like-minded people and then exist in that world. She's very perceptive. She has a lot of empathy. I remember she said something when she was young, and it was put in a book. It was 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s. But the author, who I knew, wanted to include this in her book because she thought it was remarkable, and it was this. It was Mother's Day, and I was talking to my daughter, and she said, "I'm thinking about your mother." And I said, "Okay." And she said, "No, I'm thinking about your real mother, the mother you had, not the, you know, not your, because I'm adopted." And I said, "Yes, okay." And she goes, she looked at me and she said, "It must be breaking her heart." And she said this at 5 years old.
Wow.
And so she's always had that kind of, you know, that kind of sensibility about her. And so I'm hoping that we, you know, as she grows up and life buffets her around, that she'll have a resiliency based on a good, true family value upbringing, where people really do value families, really do value what happens to them, that they have health insurance. You know, I'm retired from the federal government. I worked at the USDA for 15 years doing enterprise server management. And during the time that I worked there, and I would drive around in government cars, like in Wisconsin, people would come in front of me and slam on the brakes. They'd give me the finger. I got all sorts of nastiness. One person got out of the stoplight and spit on my car.
Jesus.
Because I had a GSA license plate. So, you know,
And that is because of the successful transmission of the perverse message. I think Horst mentioned this on my Facebook page not too long back. The successful transmission of the perverse message that basically takes a hold with Ronald Reagan that government is bad. I mean, what we have seen is a complete transition away from the idea of upholding the idea of self-government via the government of we the people into this sort of neo-secessionist, anarchist, Ayn Randian, and it's got people by the throats.
Yes.
Yeah, get the government off my back. Where's my FEMA check?
Right, but the violence that accompanies that is under the surface just by a thin skin layer. And I can't tell you how many times I've told people, you know, where'd you work? USDA? Oh, you work for the government. You know, it's just, you know, and they say, oh, you have a pension. Yeah, I have a pension. It's $420 a month. Woohoo! I'm going to live on that, really, you know.
Yeah. I mean, don't spend it all in one place, Buster.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It helps to pay my health insurance partly, you know. That's about it. But, you know, having grown up from the time when I was young, the formative years, you know, Catholic boarding school, my parents tried to get the liberal out of me by subjecting me to that.
Yeah.
And I said, you don't understand, this is going to galvanize me in the other direction. It's not going to defeat me. And they said, well, we're going to try. I said, well, try away. I mean, you know, But my dad was a Rockefeller Republican. He was one of the kinder ones. I don't think he would agree with what's going on now. My mother, however, was much more hardcore. She was a professor at Columbia University, but she was very extremely conservative. I remember her grading papers one time, and it was just shocking to me that she was grading a paper on a person, and she looked, and she goes, oh, that's that woman with horrible dreadlocks. I'm going to give her a C.
Oh, my God.
And I looked at her, and I said, Mom, you can't do that. That's immoral. You have to just grade the paper according to how good it is. And she just gave me a look, and I'm just, what? You want to do the moral thing? Get rid of that idea. But, you know, had to fight all my life about these kind of things. And so my daughter's going to be liberal. She's going to be heathen, and I'm going to be very happy about that.
I think you can take a deep breath of contentment at the very idea. You know, Michael just wrote in during our conversation, Kevin, and he said, when folks point out the supposed irony of people trampling each other at Walmarts one day after they give thanks for what they already have, I like to say, no, it's completely appropriate. Trampling each other and grabbing cheap goods is just the American way of reenacting the slaughter of the Indians and the taking of their land.
Yes. Oh, that was eloquently stated. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's right. You know, and with the dumbing down of people, with the propaganda that proliferates on our airwaves in terms of Fox News and all the other media which are skewed towards big, giant corporations, I think that we'll probably find that much of the country is going to agree with that, but there will be a sizable amount of us who don't, and then who will live in this country and love this country, but will live in it and love it in a way that is very foreign to those people who have abrogated their morals.
I think it's what we can hope for, and it begins with things like not shopping at Walmart on Black Friday. Because that,
yes.
And it's something that I've harped on over the years. The breakdown that we're dealing with here arises from the fact that people do prefer, I don't say that they don't know, but they prefer not to know, not to consider, Kevin, that consumer choices are ethical choices.
Yes.
It's very difficult to buy American things. It's very difficult to buy ethically produced things. And it goes back to this this line from Kurt Vonnegut that rides at the bottom of all of my emails. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. And I find that profound insofar as it's predicated on, you know, there's a dependent clause in there, functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society. I don't think it's exclusive. I think it gets more difficult the more money you have. I've got a story in the stack here about Lloyd Blankfein over at Goldman Sachs, I think it is. And he has declared that we must raise the retirement age because, those people wanting their Social Security is just going to break us.
And see, I just read an article on that today where they stated that people living, longer lives, they're going to use that as a fulcrum to try to dislodge them from Social
Right, but
Security.
Even that is a lie. I'd like to take, I don't know how old Lloyd Blankfein is.
Yeah.
But I'd like to take him and, let him do some, you know, laborer work for a while.
Yes.
And see how long it takes for his body to begin to degenerate. Because when they say people are living longer, what they mean is people in their class are living longer. Because the science is exactly opposite. Yes. Lifespans are decreasing in the working class. They are shortening.
What's the lifespan in Detroit? What is the lifespan in Detroit right now? I would like to know that.
Well, I know, for instance, that the lifespan of Appalachian women and women in the southeastern United States is going down.
Yes.
And these clowns who have enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills, they can't see it. We are invisible to them, Kevin. Yes. Absolutely invisible. By the way, you got a piece of fan mail in from Kate.
Oh, okay.
She says, note to Kevin, I so agree with you about the friendliness of the Canadian culture. I was raised up on the border at Sweetgrass. We shopped in Lethbridge and attended the Stampede on occasion. I love Canada, and I listen to CBC on Sirius every day. We here in the U.S. have no idea who our neighbors are. Most folks don't even know there's a city north of us with a population of over 1 million. Harper and his ilk are ruining almost everything up there. It all hurts my heart. Glad you survived your family's politics. I did, too. What a ride. Kate says, awesome. Welcome to the Horn, and your daughter is awesome.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. And then I'll call back again. I really thank you for allowing me some time to talk to you. There's lots of other things I would like to talk to you about in the future, but I would also like to allow other people to be able to get in tonight. But thank you for your show. I mean, I listened to it. And again, you mentioned Kurt Vonnegut. I just want to say that I loved his last book before he died, the book that he wrote about Bush. I thought it was absolutely wonderful and excellent. The thing that always hit me with him was his idea of extended family based on last names. Do you remember that from his books and his essays? He always said that if you were a Tucker, like my last name, if you go to another city and there's a Tucker there, you should be able to connect with them and be considered family and have a big, large extended family. He was always into that kind of idea. And again, he was one that influenced me greatly. But believe it or not, we had some liberal, brothers that taught in the Catholic school as well. And I was first turned on to Kurt Vonnegut by Brother Martin, who told me I had to read Cat's Cradle for an assignment and a book report.
Wow.
And, that is astonishing. That wouldn't happen today.
No, there would be protests and probably burnings in effigy outside the school.
That's right. Like there was in Drake, North Dakota, when they burned Slaughterhouse-5 there.
Exactly.
Yep.
And let's see, so, Cat's Cradle, is that the one with Bokanon in it?
Yeah, that's right, Bokananism.
Yeah.
He said a religion based on harmless lies.
Right,
as he put it, you know. But yeah, that man was amazing, and it's certainly a great influence on me. So I was very happy to see you bring him up because he's awesome.
Well, he's one of my heroes. He and Mark Twain are probably my two principal American heroes.
So that's awesome. Thanks again. Have a really great Thanksgiving with your family. My wife just got home. She's listening to it in the kitchen, and she's laughing hearing what we're talking about.
But, hi. Bob and the Horn family, say hi.
You want to say hi quick, Karen?
Go ahead. Say hi.
This is fantastic. I come from an evangelical religious family upbringing, so your show is a breath of fresh air.
Oh, well, bless your heart. You know, I was dipped by the heel in that stuff as a child, too. So, you know, maybe we'll all just get over it together.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. I hope we'll hear not just from Kevin, but from you as well. Your name?
Renee.
Okay, great, awesome. I look forward to it.
Me too, thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye now.
All right, well, thanks again, Bob, and take care.
My pleasure, Kevin. I hope we hear from you again soon.
You will. All right, bye-bye now.
Bye now. Wow. What a delightful call. That's Kevin and his lovely wife, Renee. And it is about 15 minutes past the hour, the third hour of the program. We'll move along now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hello.
It's Lib in South Carolina.
Oh, hey, Lib. What's up, man?
Hey, what an awesome call.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Those are some good people.
Yes, indeedy.
And happy almost anniversary. I believe it was 2 years ago tomorrow that I first called in.
Was it really?
I believe so.
I'll be darned.
Because it was my birthday.
Happy birthday, then. And I remember that, yes.
Yeah, it's been a while. So I'll be kind of indisposed tomorrow. Going to go see the VA hospital thingy. Spend some time with... some good quality time with socialized medicine.
Hot diggity. Although I can think of better ways to spend a birthday, but at this point in time, getting to go to the doctor's way up on my list.
Yeah. It's just kind of one of those things you kind of got to want to do or got to do. You know how that is.
Yep.
But
I was actually, it's funny how it all works out. I was actually thinking of you earlier today. Because just a few seconds before showtime, I realized I had forgotten to do something. And I had that wonderful email from you about, no, really, Bob, you got to have a set list. Even if you think you know it all, just have it hanging there in front of you. And I glanced up at it and went, oh. And, yeah.
Yeah, you checklist.
Yeah.
Yes, you got to have that checklist be in that email so everybody else is clued in. You know, the first two B-29s, I believe it was, crashed on takeoff due to pilot error, and they finally figured out that, as the story goes, that although the pilots were trained and they knew what the hell they were doing, the plane was smarter than they were. And they had to have the checklist in order to do it. And you know, I learned that from a guy who implemented that for doctors. Because doctors need checklists, you know, when they're doing surgery and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So they don't leave stuff
counting in the sponges, counting out the sponges, that kind of thing, right?
Exactly. Bingo. But also back to Kevin's point about his daughter. You go, man. Raise her right. It took me years to push on my daughter, who's now 27, that Walmart was not your friend. And now she calls them Communist Walmart.
Oh.
She avoids... Hell yeah. She got it.
Yeah.
She...
And if she's made it... If she's at 27 that way, you know it's stuck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's stuck in a good way. I posted this on the Horn Facebook page on Sunday, I believe it was. The whole video of Walmart, the high price the high cost of low
prices, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tough title, it really is.
Yeah, it's good, and not only is the an hour and a half video on there. There's also a good synopsis if anybody wants to go look it up. Let me roll off some numbers at you that are in that synopsis. Florida, 12,300 Walmart workers and their dependents on Medicaid. Georgia, 10,261 children of Walmart employees are enrolled in Peach Care for Children.
CHIPS in Georgia, right.
Yeah. Walmart cost to taxpayers, $1,557,000,000 to support its employees.
And again, let's take a minute with that, Lib. Let's take a second. Because, again, we're talking, the American right wing, yeah, they hate that Obamacare and that socialized medicine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. You would think then that they would want Walmart to offer health care coverage to its workers so they wouldn't have to be on the welfare. Because you know, if they're on insurance, then you know the free market's making that insurance dollar, right?
Mm-hmm. That's it.
But they can't do that because they're, well, you know, hypocrites.
And the kicker is, those numbers were from 2004.
Yeah, I
remember. 8 years ago.
Right, and it's only gone up.
Exactly. It could be.
No, Walmart has seminars for their workers on how to leverage the social welfare system.
You're kidding me.
No.
File that under Fuck Me Running.
Yeah, at a rolling donut. Right.
Yep. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, it's kind of a tangential story, but not really, Lib.
Mm-hmm.
You heard the story about the Denny's creep. That was going to put statements on the bill Obamacare surcharge.
Yeah.
That's not playing real well with the Home Office.
I heard he got his pee-pee spanked.
Yes, he did. Denny's chief executive John Miller privately reached out to Metz. Privately reached out means that that Mr. Metz woke up with a horse's head in his bed.
Right.
To express his disappointment with the Florida franchisee's controversial statements about Obamacare, we recognize his right to speak on issues, but registered our disappointment that his comments have been interpreted as the company's position.
Yeah.
We regret that. We would also regret finding Mr. Metz washed up on one of those lovely Florida beaches.
Hell, in South Carolina last week, they found two bodies in oil drums in a lake.
And neither of them, sadly, was Lloyd Blankfein. I understand.
Unfortunately, yeah, or a South Carolina politician. But, you know, you know how it goes. But... Oh yeah, I'm telling you. Anybody that goes into a restaurant, and I will be eating lunch out of town tomorrow. Within my day of medical appointments and things, and I swear I'm going to walk in and say, "Do you offer your employees health insurance?" Because I don't want to eat at a place with sick workers. You know?
Yeah, that works for me. I think it's a great idea.
The trouble is, that's
going to limit
you. None of them will.
You're going hungry.
Exactly.
I'd pack a lunch.
I should. Yeah, pack me a sandwich
and
an apple.
Yeah, and if you do find one that does, you're probably going to be upset with the one you find. Because, for instance, this is a weird little story. I mean, politics makes strange bedfellows, of course. But when, for instance, the rest of the restaurant industry throws a fit about minimum wage increases.
Uh-huh.
McDonald's goes, no, really, go ahead. Raise the minimum wage. You know why?
No.
Because McDonald's entry level hourly rate is about a buck higher than the minimum wage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah. They understand that operates to their benefit. Still McDonald's, but, you know.
But the
restaurant industry, you know, I've had Tony Bourdain on this program a couple of times, and of course he's written extensively.
Let me tell you the other part of the story. My daughter, now 27, she is the highest paid Waffle House cook in her district, down in Georgia. Now, she's been with the corporation pretty much consistently for the past 10 years. She gets $9 an hour, and they put a target on her back.
Yeah, she's making too much money.
Damn straight.
Well, the restaurant industry is a brutal, brutal industry.
Oh, it absolutely is.
And the thing is, if you don't want to, you know, I don't like to eat corporate, and we've got some good little restaurants around here, so when we can eat out, I try to make sure that we eat at one of these little places that, you know, where the
right.
where you at least know the money you spend is going to have the local multiplier effect.
Exactly.
But the problem is that even then, the people who are, I mean, there are people running restaurants who own the restaurants. I mean, there are friends of mine who, mm-hmm. you know, an injury put them out of business.
Exactly.
Because they didn't have insurance for themselves.
Right. Well, why can't
the business geniuses, Lib, why can't the business geniuses in this country figure out that if you really want to empower small business, if you really want to promote job growth, then taking the healthcare monkey off the backs of business and just creating a universal single-payer healthcare system would be the single greatest job stimulus this country has ever known.
It benefits them. It's like the original idea for Medicare was to take the most expensive patients out of the private insurance business. Oh, good. You're 65? Good. We don't have to cover your ass no more because you cost us too damn much money.
Right.
And the insurance companies were all for it. The AMA was all for it. But then it laid on, they found out that LBJ, his grand scheme of things was, okay, after we get this up and running, we're going to roll back from 65 to 60 in 5 years, and from 60 to 55 in another 5 years, and keep it rolling down.
Until it is universal.
Exactly. And that's when they all went freaking bazonkers and said, oh, no, this is socialism. And you know, they employed that actor Ronald Reagan, First Lieutenant Ronald Reagan. I've actually seen his military orders assigning him to U.S. Army Entertainment.
But I tell you what, he sure did like that socialized medicine when John Hinckley proved to be such a rotten shot.
Yeah, he sure did. Also on that same set of orders was a Sergeant Orville Gene Kelly.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, yeah. That's how they did their military service.
You remember that story about when Reagan was shot, Lib? About how were rolling him into surgery, and he looked at the doc and said, well, I sure hope you're a Republican. You know, what a prick.
I don't remember
that. Yeah, he did that. And bless his heart, you know what the doctor did?
No.
The doctor looked at him and said, Mr. President, today we're all Republicans.
Republicans. Do you know who one of the nurses was?
No.
who was the pastor for Obama? God damn the USA.
Oh, Jeremiah Wright.
One of the nurses.
Yes.
He was a United States Marine Corps nurse in that operating room. Of course, you'll never see that on Fox News.
No,
can't have that. Can't have that. But let me tie all of this back up.
Put a bow on it.
Going back to Jim, talking about put the solar panels on the big box stores. I have been professing that. I've been screaming that from the rooftop ever since Katrina. We need a local ordinance or statewide ordinance, whatever. Every big box store, you want to build another Walmart? Okay, you are required to put in solar or wind power.
Yeah.
To make up a certain percentage of your usage. And my idea is to require it for every state and federal building. You know, give an exclusion for historical sites. You know, you don't want it necessarily on the state house or anything, but all these flat roof schools, firehouses, police stations, they should be required. It's a public safety issue, in my thinking.
And if you wanted to make it a corporate welfare giveaway, you could funnel the money through electric utilities. Something similar is, not exactly, but similar, is why there was such a proliferation of solar panels in Germany. There was a public-private partnership. And surely to God, the right wing could be happy with something like that. But you raise a larger issue, and that is, Lib, that is the idea of a distributed grid.
Exactly.
I wish I had a million listeners, because we would have gotten this sort of out into the public consciousness, and maybe the question would get asked. I still want to know, when Sandy blew over those offshore wind turbines, what happened to them? When those brutal 100-mile-an-hour winds blew over those wind turbines, what happened to them?
Because that didn't happen, did it?
Well, yeah, it did.
Really?
I mean, they didn't blow them over. It blew, you know, but blew over them, not blew them over.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, what they did is they spun more. And they made more electricity.
Well, you
and with a distributed grid, something like that doesn't create. And you know, are the geniuses?
Right, it doesn't take everybody out. It takes out a portion, maybe.
And then a smart grid reroutes stuff.
See, you're talking my language here. I used to design audio system. You know, distributed system is the way to go. I put my power amplifiers as close to my speakers as possible, because you lose power in the cable.
Right.
Why do I want to waste
my
power?
Well, look at our tired old grid that we've got today. What is it?
40-something percent?
Yeah.
43% efficiency.
So,
what the hell are we doing?
So let's just work this through. You've got coal-fired power plant A. Now, the
right.
best that coal can ever hope for is about 30% of its thermal potential being converted to energy.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes out onto our tired old grid with a 40-some-odd percent efficiency. So that's 40% of 30%. Wait a minute. 30.
Right, we're screwed to begin with.
Well, we're not, and yet, you know, the question is, and I understand that in the midst of a crisis like Sandy, mm-hmm. when you're just trying to get the basic necessities of life to people, you can't sit down and have a skull sweat session over something like that. But you know what? Well, you got a post-it note. You got an iPhone. You got a tablet. You know, and it's got a little app on it that says, you know, notes. Just tap it in there real quick, like, after things are settled down, let's talk about a smart grid and a distributed system.
Right.
Where everything isn't dependent upon, right, you know.
Well, like I said, what really opened my eyes was Katrina. It's like if those hospitals had solar, wind, or whatever power, you know, the police departments, the schools, you know, they would have been making energy the next day.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been able to operate some pumps. Maybe not a whole lot, but
when the difference is between zero and some
is a whole lot.
Some is better.
It's life and death is what it comes down to. And that's what got me on that kick.
And meanwhile, Randy up in Pennsylvania just pointed out something, and he's right. He says the utility company's idea of a smart grid is to remotely turn off your appliances during peak power load.
Right. Yeah, of course they want to do that.
You know, I mean, we get crippled here every month because that cheap coal-fired electricity that's supposed to, you know, well, you know, that's one of the benefits of living in it.
You're talking about that good, clean coal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It cripples us every month. I mean, it's the single largest utility bill we pay.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, granted, there's a lot of electricity going around through the wires here. I mean, just looking around, let's see. Mixer board, two monitors, two PCs, phones, phone processor, speakers, little compressor.
You've got all the good toys. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pro studio. But that plus a refrigerator and a stove and light bulbs in the ceiling that are compact fluorescents should not be $350 a month.
Oh, my freaking God.
But it is.
I do not burn lights at home.
Now, granted, my family's gotten used to old dad having a conniption, because every now and then I'll pop out in the living room and say, how about that? We've got a very nicely lighted empty bathroom in here. Click.
Right. Yeah. What's
it's a compact fluorescent.
Right. Which burn a tenth of what a regular bulb would do. But anyways, living alone, I don't burn lights at night unless I absolutely have to. I get around. I have the light of my computer monitor and my TV, and I have never, ever stepped on my black dog or my black cat or my gray and black cat. I have never stepped on them. I shuffle my feet a little bit because I'm getting old, but, you know.
But that's, and some of that, again, goes back to that consumer attitude we were talking about, Liv.
Live with less.
Well, it's not even so. Look, I was in the store, not Wally World, and I was down some aisle. I forget what I was at coffee filters or something. But they kept the coffee filters down where the coffee makers were.
Yeah.
Instead of over by the coffee, which, you know, I don't know. There's probably a computer inventory monitoring system somewhere that says it's better to keep them next to the coffee makers because you sell more coffee makers. Sorry, I'll be better.
Yeah.
Right. And this lady comes along and says, I'm looking for an electric can opener, young man. Young man?
Oh, God.
And I looked at her and said,
that had to make your day.
Yeah, I said, well, ma'am, I don't work here, but I think we're in the right place. Let's look. Because I'm nice that way.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, look, here's six different electric can openers. And then I handed her one, And I said, but this one doesn't use any electricity, and they don't blow up any mountains when you use them.
And it costs $6.
Actually, this one was $12 because it was one of the ones that removes the lid without leaving you a jagged edge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really sexy.
Yeah, that's a nice one. God.
And I said, this is what we use. And it works real well, and it lasts forever. I didn't think about that, and took it, and well, thank you. And walked away, and I thought, take my victories where I can find them.
I actually had to replace my can opener about 2 years ago because I had worn it out. I would turn the handle, and it would smile back at me and said, no, we're not going through this can. I have not had an electric can opener in 30 years.
You know how I came to hate them? And it had nothing to do with environmentalism or anything. When I was a kid, we had an electric can opener that had a knife sharpener on the back.
Oh, yeah. I remember those. Yeah.
And and I'm just weird, and I admit it. But there are things I can't stand to hear. You know, that fingernails on a chalkboard thing?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
as
I grew up, it got to where my dad would holler, boy, I'm going to sharpen a knife. And he'd give me about 2 minutes to get out, you know, far enough away from the house that I couldn't hear it.
Right. I hear you.
I hated that sound.
Oh, yeah. I have a sharpening stone on a wooden handle that I sharpen my knives with. I've had it for probably 30 years.
Well, I'm even geekier. What do they call it? An Arkansas stone? One of those three-bladed or three-sided triangular affairs sits in a wooden rack in descending orders of grit.
Oh, that's real nice.
And then because I am really a geek and because I shave with a straight razor. I've got it. That's even nicer.
See, I fixed that problem.
I would go on eBay and find for $10 or $15, you know, these 100-year-old straight razors.
Oh my God!
And rehabilitate them, and polish them up with the Dremel and everything till the mirror finish comes back. And you know, they're old German steel. They're beautiful. And then you take the sharpening stones, the wet, the wet sharpening stones.
Whetstone,
yeah. And just, they will do that thing where you pull the hair and you go, and you can, we can get a good blade going around here. And I don't have to hear that, thing going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're giving me the heebie-jeebies now.
Yeah, see, I'm...
All right.
I just had that walking, somebody just walked over my grave kind of thing. Yeah.
Right, yeah. All right, Bob, thank you, and the crowd, Jude and Lottie and Sparky and Kat and everybody, thank you, all of you. You're good company, and I really appreciate the show. Keep it up, brother.
I'm going to try.
I know you're pedaling as fast as you can, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Liv. I really appreciate it. You have a wonderful evening and a happy Thanksgiving. And a good trip tomorrow and a happy birthday.
All right. Thank you so much. Everybody do well.
All right. Thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
And that's Liberal in South Carolina. One of his, Jim, of course, is a fellow South Carolinian, and he said, sending regards to Lib. Yes, cats see so much better and see in the dark. I wish we could in so many ways. Pointing out, Jim did along the way, you know, solar plus an efficient grid. Distribution is key. Decentralize the grid. Yeah, and again, you would think the Repiglicans and the right-wingers and the Ayn Randers and would be all about something that was decentralized, right? But their philosophy is just for, you know, some of that just for show. We got to burn, we got to burn more coal. We're going to drill for more oil. A little bit ago, Andy wrote in upon my mention of Lloyd Blankfein, who is a disgusting, disgusting man. he gave an interview to CBS News and Scott Pelley. And he said, you're going to have to undoubtedly do something to lower people's expectations, the entitlements and what people think they're going to get, because it's not going to. They're not going to get it. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, says Pelley. You can look at history of these things, and Social Security wasn't devised to be a system that supported you for a 30-year retirement after a 25-year career. So there will be things that, you know, the retirement age has to be changed. Maybe some of the benefits have to be affected. Maybe some of the inflation adjustments have to be revised. But in general, entitlements have to be slowed down and contained. You know what? He wouldn't be saying that if it affected him. It only affects the invisible people. You know, we've got a lot of people in this state, many of whom voted for Willard Romney, go figure, who are on disability or workers' comp or some form of assistance. But it's not because they've been on it all their lives. That's the myth that the right wing likes to create and likes to push. Bunch of lazy-ass poor people won't do nothing. They're on it because they were literally broken on the rack and the wheel of the industries that have made Mr. Blankfein richer than Croesus. And so it came as no surprise to me when I saw that Andy had written in and said, Mr. Blankfein needs to pay up. He must pay up. 100% marginal tax rate on his first $3.2 million. This bastard is lucky he's not in jail. Instead of pontificating on lowering the retirement age while the longevity of working people shrinks, I think Andy means raising the retirement age, he should be doing time in prison. This is the problem. These neoliberal CEO crooks are not giving back to society. In his case, open the doors to Attica. And by the way, good caller, Kevin from Minnesota. Thanks. Signed, Andy. And it just goes to show what poor thinkers these people are. Lower the retirement age. Lower it. Set retirement up for 60, 55. And open the gates of employment for the millions of Americans who are young and coming out of college or finishing high school. And let them enter the workforce and start making their futures. It can be done. Jesus, it could be done. The only reason that we act like it couldn't be done is because there is a sacred cow in the budget called the Pentagon. You know, abattoirs are us. Because we have a completely upside down view of what the phrase national security means. Now, I got a bunch of other stuff, a lot of which can keep until tomorrow in prayer meeting Wednesday. But I ran across this particular piece earlier today. It is a recent speech by Chris Hedges. No, perhaps it's not recent. Perhaps it goes back to 2009. But it remains relevant. Let me check mail real quick. Oh, yeah, Andy clearing things up. You're right, I meant raising the retirement age. Thanks, Andy. I thought I had it. But as we watch death and destruction rain down on Gaza, this is relevant, whether it's 2009 or 2012.
The incursion and bombardment of Gaza is not about destroying Hamas. It is not about stopping rocket fire into Israel. It is not about achieving peace. The Israeli decision to rain death and destruction on Gaza, to use lethal weapons of the modern battlefield on a largely defenseless civilian population, is the final phase in the decades-long campaign to ethnically cleanse Palestinians. The assault on Gaza is about creating squalid, lawless, and impoverished ghettos in the West Bank and Gaza, where life for Palestinians will be barely sustainable. It is about building a series of ringed Palestinian enclaves where the Israeli military will have the ability to instantly shut off movement, food, medicine, and goods to perpetuate the misery. Privilege and power, especially military power, is a dangerous narcotic. Violence destroys those who bear the brunt of its force, but also those who try to use it to become gods. Israel uses sophisticated attack jets and naval vessels to bomb densely crowded refugee camps, schools, apartment blocks, mosques, and slums, to attack a population that has no air force, no air defense, no navy, no heavy weapons, no artillery units, no mechanized armor, no command and control, no army, and calls it a war. It is not a war. It is murder. Images of dead Palestinian children lined up as if asleep on the floor of the main hospital in Gaza are a metaphor for the future. Israel will from now on speak to the Palestinians in the language of death. Those who orchestrate such sieges do not grasp the terrible rage born of long humiliation, indiscriminate violence, and abuse. A father or a mother whose child dies because of a lack of vaccines or proper medical care does not forget. A boy whose ill grandmother dies while being detained at an Israeli checkpoint does not forget. Families who carry the broken bodies of their children to hospitals do not forget. All who endure humiliation, abuse, and the murder of those they love do not forget. This rage becomes a virus within those who eventually stumble out into the daylight. Is it any wonder that 71% of children interviewed at a school in Gaza recently said they wanted to be a martyr? The refusal by our political leaders, from Barack Obama to all but five members of Congress, to the major media, to speak out in defense of the rule of law and fundamental human rights exposes our cowardice and our hypocrisy. The public debate about the Gaza attack engages in the absurd pretense that it is Israel, not the Palestinians, whose security and dignity is being threatened. This blind defense of Israeli brutality towards the Palestinians is a betrayal of the memory of all those killed in other genocides in other times. The lesson of the Holocaust is not that Jews are special. It is not that Jews are unique. It is not that Jews are eternal victims. The lesson of the Holocaust is that when you have the capacity to halt genocide, and you do not, no matter who carries out that genocide or who it is directed against, you are culpable. And we are very culpable. The F-16 fighter jets, the Apache attack helicopters, the 250-pound smart GBU-39 bombs are all part of the $3 billion military aid we give to Israel. Palestinians are being killed tonight with American-made weapons. But perhaps our callous indifference to human suffering is to be expected. We, after all, kill women and children on an even vaster scale in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Again, that is Chris Hedges from 2009 with a shocking degree of relevance for today. If you want to hear it again or view it again, the video images with it are stunning and heartrending. I simply searched at YouTube Chris Hedges, America's Silence. I thought it was something like that. It turns out it's titled America, the Silence of a Nation. And there's a direct connection between American silence over atrocities and crimes against humanity like that and what we will eventually be asked to bear, we invisible people, by the likes of the Lloyd Blank Fines and the rest of the Wall Street crowd who have decided that it's time for us to lose Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. When in fact the military aid we give to Israel, $3.3 billion? Yeah, it'd do some good. We could shore some things up. A couple of emails to round out the program. Ron and Raleigh said, by the way, guess who's advertising on PBS, Bob? I was watching This Old House the other day, and I almost spit out my Miller High Life when I saw an ad for Goldman Sachs. What the hell are these guys selling that I would want? Of course, I love Nova. And at the end of every Nova broadcast, guess what I see? Brought to you by the Koch brother. Right? Yeah. Anything for a buck. Dr. Allen. I'm sorry, Dr. Allen, writing in this evening toward show's end, said, I heard your conversation with a gentleman from Texas last night. That would be our buddy Edward in Dallas. Although I'm in Waco now, I grew up on the coast and was a Texas surfer. So I'd like to comment a bit on your conversation. Number one, the tar balls you discussed were, in fact, on the Texas coast as long as 45 years ago. I recall removing tar balls from my huge surfboards in those days and from my body. Number two, cabbage heads, mentioned by Edward, are large, whitish, rounded jellyfish that do, in fact, have the appearance of a cabbage. Although they may sting some people, many of us were not stung by this variant, and I used to play with them, handle them, and throw them around. Portuguese man-of-war have a delicate, bluish, soft, bag-like body which floats on the surface and from which trails long tentacles. Most people are stung from contact with the tentacles. The man-of-war type often are found on the beach, while the cabbage head are usually not found in this way. And number three, I wrote you a while back concerning my personal experience with the Chevy Volt. It's a fantastic green car. And I've still got the email, and I confess, Dr. Allen, sometimes I hang on to things like that and sort of keep them in my mind. Because I know that the way things work around here, there will eventually be some story about some right-winger out there complaining, as has happened recently, but previous to your letter, about the communist, fascist, Islamist, you know, whatever thing they're upset about today, anti-gun maybe, Chevy Volt, at which time I planned on bringing your note out of the vault, and because it is it's a beautiful stirring, inspiring, pion to that vehicle. I'd like to have one. Call me crazy. Dr. Allen closes saying, I really enjoy your program, Bob. Keep up the excellent work. Thanks, Dr. Allen. And thanks to all of you who, with your kind contributions, keep all of this going. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Sparky is also the moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat on Friday nights. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes for the show post help. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. Soon the website itself will have a nice new facelift. But go there. It still works. and you can learn how to be a part of the end of Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, cutie, it's all for you. Rick Smith on the way on the Horn.